ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय एवं भगवतो रूपम् सुभद्रं ध्यायतो मनः निर्वृत्य प्रयातोर्णम् सम्पन्नं न निवर्तते एवं भगवतो रूपम् सुभद्रं ध्यायतो मनः निर्वृत्यापर्ययात्तूर्णम् सम्पन्नं न निवर्तते एवं Thus, भगवतः of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Rupam, form. Subhadram, very auspicious. Dhyayataha, meditating. Manaha, the mind. Nirvritya, being free from all material contamination. Paraya, transcendental. Tornam, very soon. Sampanam, being enriched. Na, never. Nivartate, come down. Translation, one who meditates in this way, concentrating his mind upon the all-auspicious form of the Lord, is very soon freed from all material contamination, and he does not come down from meditation upon the Lord. Purport. This fixed meditation is called samadhi or trance. A person constantly engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord cannot be deviated from meditating on the form of the Lord as described herein. The Archana Marg, or the devotional path prescribed in the Pancharatrika, the Pancharatra system of devotional service for worshipping the deity in the temple, makes the devotee think constantly of the Lord. That is samadhi, or trance. One who practices in this way cannot deviate from the service of the Lord, and that makes him perfect in the mission of human life. Thinking to read the next verse also because the previous verses end similarly. The ones that we discussed yesterday. This process of meditation upon the form of the Lord frees one from all material contamination. By this process, what Narada is doing explicitly is he's freeing Dhruva from his material desire. Because by meditating on this form, it frees one from all material contamination. He presented a Brahminical bit of advice. Give up your competitive, get back at my stepmother spirit. Be neutral. and so forth. I can't do that. Okay? Here's a process that will free you from that spirit, free you from your material contamination. Even if you have the competitive spirit and material purpose, that will be mitigated or eliminated by this process of meditation itself, provided that the object is transcendental. So when it comes to meditation, real meditation, it's not like sectarian, it's scriptural. Real meditation is meditation upon the form of the Lord, the qualities of the Lord, the name of the Lord, the pastimes of the Lord. Real meditation is that. It's something like the description that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur offers in a nice little book that was originally a paper that was delivered before an assembly of very learned fellows. Historically, from time to time, not only in Kali Yuga, but especially in Kali Yuga, there's disputes. And then there's groups of people that get behind this disputant, and groups of people that get behind that disputant, and it becomes like a conflict. So during Bhaktivinoda Thakur's time, when his son Bhaktisiddhanta was something like around 30 years old, brahmachari, there was a dispute amongst intellectuals, believe it or not. And there's a group of intellectuals that were called Brahmo or Brahmovadis or Brahmoism. And their idea was that one needed to be born in a Brahmin family, and those who are born in a Brahmin family are inherently in a superior social position than those that are not. And only those were entitled to certain brahminical activity, like worshipping of the deity and other and rituals, the performance of rituals. And then there's another group that they saw themselves as more liberal, and they had their scriptural authority also that said, of all the groups of persons within society, the Vaishnavas are best, and the Vaishnavas can be taken from any sector of society, provided they follow the tenets of Vaishnavism, which is, of course, very similar to our idea, but not their presentation wasn't identical with our idea, but their idea was, it's, you know, like anybody can become the best, a kind of a liberalism, just, you know, apply yourself and you can become the best, kind of like the American ethic. Work hard and you can achieve. And anybody can work hard and achieve. So, anyone can become the topmost. They don't have to be born. And then if you're not born, then, you know, forget it. It's if you apply yourself. And so that kind of liberalism, modern liberalism, was entering into the intellectual arena. And so they had their proponents on both sides, and it was a national issue. It wasn't, you know, So they went to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, please help me. Everyone respects you. From both sides, everybody respects you. And can you please help us? And he was very ill. He had, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's health had periods of time when he was in very bad condition of health. Oh, so one can ask, wow, gee, a great personality. Why does Krishna let that happen? But it happened in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's case. And so he was in a, you know, in a bed. And he couldn't get out of, you know, his health didn't permit him to extend himself. So he was expressing his, this is in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's biography, Ray of Vishnu, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was expressing his deep regret that isn't there not one person in the whole of our illustrious land of India that cannot step forward and clarify these issues so that both parties are satisfied? Is there not one person of such quality in the whole of our country? Has Kali Yuga become so degraded that people can't even, you know, see two sides and reach a conclusion? Is there not one person? So he was expressing like this, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, if you so wish, I can make that attempt. He was very happy. Yes, you should do that. So it was amongst intellectuals at least, a very important and an historical clash and an historical moment. From historians' point of view, what this bashing that goes on in the intellectual community trickles down and has profound effect upon people in general. When it's going on, we may not pay too much attention to it because that's just intellectuals bashing each other. That goes on. But like in our modern time, it shapes the people in general and how, you know, what they receive and how in turn they view the world, what their values are and so on. It's significant for shaping world history. Like, you know, the tussle that's going on presently in intellectual circles and then in turn into the courtroom. And, you know, then in turn into the textbooks of all the kids that go to public schools in the United States and then in turn around the world. Whether evolutionary theory is science and intelligent design is garbage, or whether one is as much science as the other and both should be in science textbooks. I mean, when I think about what that, the implication of that, that take these two things. According to law in the United States of America, all children between the age of 5 and whatever it is, 16 or 18, must attend school. They give options, but you must, it's compulsory, you must attend school. And if it's a public school, I mean, parents can be put into severe difficulty if they don't enroll their children in school. Of course they want to, but supposing they don't do that, they're in trouble. It's a law. Then on the other side is God is out of the picture, and at least in public schools, because public money can't be used towards God, so you gotta go to school and God's absent. And you just do that for a few generations and decades and a couple centuries, and what do you have? It's not just erosion. You have, you know, designed atheism. Unintelligent design. So in the courtrooms, I don't know the number presently, but you know, about 2 years ago, there were something like 15 court cases going on in different states, fighting over those that are the science, you know, the science teachers and the science departments of public education, saying you can't, that's not science, you can't have intelligent design. And the people, intelligent design folks that don't have all the resources, but they have, you know, an intellectual conviction, whether fighting it out in the courtroom. And so far, the evolutionists have won the court cases that I'm aware of. There may be others that I'm not aware of. But the courts that I'm aware of have ruled that it can go in the philosophy section of textbooks, but it can't, or you know, the religious view section of textbooks, but it can't go in the science section of textbooks. Anyway, and that shapes society, how people see the world, how you see the world around us, how you see God. It shapes, you know, what your experience is and the quality of life. So that was the scene, Brahmos and the Vaishnava group. And, you know, the Brahmos were very strong. Anyway, so Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur came, and it was for one full day. And you know how high he speaks, a one full day of glorifying the position of the brahmanas. So by the end of the day, those that were on that side, they were going, yay, this man is brilliant. He understands this issue. Yay. And the next day was, but one who is a brahmana knows Brahman. How can one be a brahmana without knowing Brahman? And what is Brahman? And various references expressing that Brahman implies, same as Jiva Goswami, Brahman implies the personality of Godhead. To know Brahman means to know God, and to know God, then you engage in his devotional service. And one who is engaged in his devotional service is the mature fruit of a brahmana. Therefore, the Vaishnava is superior. Oh. And the other group was going, yay. So meditation, similarly, fixing the mind. So there's mechanical processes of helping one to fix the mind. There's the mentioned in this section, pranayama. It is withdrawing the subtle senses from even the activity of extending the senses into the field of the material energy. It's withdrawing and consolidating them, making the mind peaceful. So, you know, many people, hey, you can do that, that's spiritual. You know, even a little bit of that, it's spirit. I feel so much better. That must be what spiritual is. But the same kind of idea, while that's bringing without control of the mind and senses, there's no question of yoga. But then what's the culmination of yoga? It's very clear. In the Bhagavad Gita, 6th chapter, dhyana yoga. What's the conclusion of all dhyanis, of all meditators? The topmost is one. The conclusion is when you fix your mind upon the Supreme in great faith. Shravan bhajate yomam, engage in his service. That's the best. That's the, you get your certificate. You complete the course. So this implies that some means of meditation when it's matured is that. And one who attains that doesn't fall down. Na nivartate. Sampanam na nivartate. Sampanam means being enriched. Translation, being enriched. So it's like the spark that's taken from the fire, and then you put the spark back in fire, and it's now enriched by being in the fire, and it's going to ignite. It's going to have the properties of fire in fullness of its capacity, heat and light. And that spark in touch with something else gives heat and light. It in that position, it won't leave. So again, with meditation, what is that object upon which one might meditate that one will not fall down? It's something that's completely natural for the living entity. It's all attractive. Param drishtva nivartate. It's the higher taste. It's a natural position. Vishaya vinivartante niraharsha dehinam. If one tries to restrain one's senses from the objects of the senses, but there's still some hankering for those objects of the senses that I'm restraining them from, it's incomplete. It's pretense. But if instead the mind is engaged in the most satisfying, complete, pure object, mind doesn't want to go anywhere. We discussed this yesterday. And in that state, purification, complete purification. There's not even a trace of something else remaining. Not even a trace of contamination. Thus enriched, one doesn't fall down. So that's up there. It's trance, samadhi. And Prabhupada is being very generous. And where do you hear the next purport? He's extremely generous. But by the process of meditation upon the deity form of the Lord, very quickly one attains samadhi. So those of you that would like to attain samadhi, sign up for the deity worship program. Because very quickly you'll attain samadhi. And what is that? What is that samadhi? It's always thinking of the Lord. It doesn't mean, you know, the conventional external appearance of samadhi. It might, but it doesn't necessarily mean that. What Dhruva was doing. The program that Dhruva was being advised to give, Prabhupada is making a one-to-one correlation between that, which was very severe, and our process, which is very sweet. But the level of attainment is the same. Absorption of the mind. And that's the intended purpose. Well, that Krishna becomes pleased is the intended purpose. But from our side, absorption, those that have the service in doing this very nicely for Krishna's pleasure, and the mind becomes absorbed. It's a wonderful facility, very, very, very great mercy. One who practices in this way cannot deviate from the service of the Lord, and that makes him perfect in the mission of human life. So there's the vittis of deity worship, the rules and regulations. But the rules and regulations, when strictly followed, with the right purpose in mind of why we're following them, they're not essences unto themselves, they're to assist us in the mission of pleasing Krishna, becoming attached to Krishna, and being detached from contamination, cleanliness and punctuality and other things that are regulations that help us become free from contamination. And in the maturing stage, again, very generously Prabhupada describes that the devotees who consider how to decorate the deity, you know, if you have the service, how to decorate the deity nicely, what garlands we will have for tomorrow and this coming week, and, you know, the absorption of planning all of that out. We discussed this already, so just repeating some of these ideas. But that, very generously, Prabhupada calls spontaneous. It's prompted by vidhis, but it's beyond vidhis. It's thinking within the frame of those regulations how to make something very nice for Krishna. And one's mind in that way becomes absorbed in thought of Krishna. And those who do this service find that it's not just, okay, now it's time to think of Krishna because I have to do some seva. But the mind becomes absorbed in different times of the day, and gradually and gradually and gradually it becomes a central part of one's meditation in life through nicely rendering deity worship. And next, I won't discuss this tomorrow, but the next is join that with chanting of mantra. Fixing the mind upon Krishna in his form, and then further purifying oneself by chanting a mantra. And then the verse following that is Narada gives him his mantra. In this purport, last point, in this purport, Prabhupada uses such words as constantly thinking of the Lord. In the previous verse, it's he draws special attention to niyatena. It indicates that one should practice this meditation regularly or always. Niyatak smarane nakalaha. So it's the facility is there. It depends how we apply ourselves to it. It needs minimally a regular execution of those activities to bring about the desired cleansing effect and attraction and attachment effect and the spontaneous effect. From our position, the regulations of Vidhi Sadhana Bhakti are very important. So when we stress upon them, it's not like, you know, punishment or something. It's encouragement to go further in the process of bhakti. Okay, so any questions? Comments? Yes.
And yesterday's talk, we were also hearing about one who's attracted to the form of the Lord would never fall down.
Yeah.
How to understand this in the context of a minor situation? What does it mean? Because there is some attraction in this there that prompts the initializing devotional service, but one begins devotional service because there's some attraction. But then you're maybe called out.
Yeah. So one can submit and one can slacken in one submission. Free will is there. To the when one comes to the stage when there's actual attraction, that is to say, the anarthas of the heart are eradicated so that those obstacles are removed and real attraction awakens at the bhava stage. Technically, at the bhava stage, one can't fall down. Technically, at the prema stage, one can't fall down, but commonly at the bhava stage, it's very unique. Bharat Maharaj has a unique history. As long as there's contamination, in short, as long as there's contamination, one can fall down. But this can take one beyond contamination. And when that stage beyond contamination is reached, full absorption, one cannot fall down. So what about us? We can fall down, because we're not at that stage. This opens up, you know, that other topic. I don't know if we need to go there. Yes?
To meditate on the form of Krishna, I think of the altar.
Okay.
I think of the things that Krishna does.
Okay.
The stories of Krishna.
Yeah.
Is this all transcendental?
Yeah. They're of the same transcendental nature, the form of Krishna, as in the deity form, the pastimes of Krishna, the loving exchanges of Krishna, and the details, Krishna's smile, Krishna's glance, and Krishna's loving dealings. They're all of the same spiritual nature, and those are similar meditations. You'll hear this question that you're asking in tomorrow's purport. It's expanded a bit. Yes?
Thank you, Guru Maharaj. I have a simple question. When we start meditating on the form of the Supreme Lord or Guru Maharaj, then it seems like everything rests. That I try to do is a kind of spiritual disturbance.
A kind of?
Yeah, spiritual disturbance. The other
spiritual disturbance?
Whatever I'm trying to engage myself in good things, I want to know most of my life, and though these things are earlier a part of my life, and I never noticed this, but now it seems like all these other engagements are a kind of spiritual disturbance. Like most of the time, I see in normal circumstances I should have done that, but now I'm kind of avoiding those things. And I mean, how to, like, you know, come over with this feeling? For example, like
go into the office. That's one. Okay, this is a big topic, and I'll give a short answer to a big topic. The short answer is, we have our constitutional nature is to be servant of Krishna. We have our conditional nature, which we can describe according to the modes of nature that are impelling us, or the model of varna and ashram. So now we're a spirit soul that's constitutionally Krishna's servant, that's got this varna and ashram, that's not who we are. You know, each of us has a particular nature. In your case, you're grahastha and you have a particular field of work. That's your ashram and your occupation, born of impulses of the modes of nature. So now you could do what Krishna, what Arjuna wanted to do, and that is just give it up and just, you know, do bhakti. Arjuna is told by Krishna, you don't have the qualification to do that, Arjuna. You perform your prescribed duty and always think of me. It would be artificial. But through gradual execution of duties, varna and ashram duties, while meditating upon Krishna, the two things, the original bhakti that's of the soul grows and grows and grows and grows and grows and grows and grows. It's like a visual image is like a seed that sprouts, and there's a covering of the seed, but as the seed grows and grows, the covering is cast off. And then the creeper, the little shoot, starts to grow and grow and grow and becomes mature. So we have to acknowledge realistically what is our conditioning, and from that frame act theistically and nurture bhakti. That's one. Another is, part of the challenge of doing that is to see Krishna's energy as Krishna's energy instead of, you know, an opportunity for me to enjoy or suffer. Because it's Krishna's energy. It's also part of Krishna's service. As I'm serving, it's meant for Krishna's service, it's not meant for my enjoyment. So that's part of the transition. The theory is one thing, the consciousness is another thing, but the consciousness comes through the growth of bhakti and the direct activities of devotional service, which I join with my conditional activities. And the third point is, according to Sri Brahma Samhita, when you join those conditional activities with direct sadhana practices, those activities become as liberating as your direct devotional activities. They become spiritualized. They're not distractions if it's approached properly. So now, back to your question, I see them as distractions. And in general, minimizing stuff and maximizing direct devotional, that's good. That's good. But stuff can also be fully spiritualized. Fully spiritualized. And it's not by a snap of the fingers, it's gradually. By how things grow, is gradually. We didn't get covered all at once, we're not going to get uncovered all at once either. It's going to be gradual. There's a process. And by that process, that spiritualization of the stuff takes place. That I can only see a little bit of it compared to where I was before, I didn't see any of it, and gradually as one goes along, one can see how I can be an instrument of Krishna in the land of stuff, you know, in the external energy, the land of duality. I can be an instrument of Krishna in this situation, directly and indirectly, both. One of the easiest places to get like a quick summary of what I just said is Brahma Samhita, text 61. Sri Brahma Samhita, text 61. You can read the previous verses. Brahma expresses the same dilemma to Lord Vishnu, and Vishnu gives this answer. Read it. It's Bhaktisiddhanta's high language, but the answer is there. Thank you very much. Shiva Prabhupada Kintai.